live in an enlightened age, Peter, where science not only reveals the old mysteries as mere superstitions, but little by little discovers the true mysteries of the universe. However, I would not play with the occult if I were you. One's obsession with it could be the real danger.
All right. Cut the music. We're about to do little conspiracies on conspiracies on conspiracies with Harry Potter, part two. If you haven't listened to part one, well, you know where to go. Go back in time. You can find it. We're going to, previously, we talked about the Harry Potter movies. I gave you a little intro, a little background on the occult religion, how it shows up in the Harry Potter films and the stories with Sirius Black's tattoos. Talked about the adversarial concepts, the religious concepts, H.P. Blavatsky, basically how the occultists have sort of been embedding symbolism, subconsciously talking to us to bring about the new age that Aleister Crowley spoke of. And of course, Blavatsky has so much in the Harry Potter universe, the Potterverse, that we went through a whole bunch of stuff, and we're going to continue that today. So if you haven't listened to part one, I beg you, please do so. Go back, take a listen, and join along, because today we're going to go deeper, so deep into Harry Potter that we're going to get into alchemy, polarities, and as we go along this journey, we're going to learn about the Deathly Hallows, Hermes, Lucifer, Crowley, Minerva, Draco. I'm not talking about the guns. I'm talking about the magician with the Ouroboros tattoos. And of course, the culmination of the whole thing, the apotheosis. Make no mistake about it, Harry Potter is akin to the 2001 A Space Odyssey in the sense that all of the millennial generation was taken for a ride on the occult roller coaster for the transmutation, the alchemical process, which is our first topic of today's show. Because alchemy, one of the processes of the occult, one of the practices, takes place for Harry Potter. Because ultimately, Harry Potter's saga is a tale of the alchemical transmutation. Now, what is alchemy? Well, we consider it the attempts to turn lead into gold, but that is just a veiled analogy for the real meaning, the real truth of alchemy, which is spiritualizing the material world with the death and rebirth of the Messiah, the apotheosis of Harry Potter. I've been saying that wrong since the first episode. Apotheosis. Anyways, the word will be revealed, and I'm not speaking of the Freemason word, the lost word. We're talking about the Logos. Speaking, creating reality, manifesting from the voice. That's what the magic is all about. And Harry Potter is the alchemical transmutation. He will be the Phoenix. That's why he's in the Order of the Phoenix, rising like the Phoenix from the ashes, reborn the New Age. Now, this tale, this Harry Potter tale, is of course a public initiation of the masses into the New World. It's also a bit of a sneak diss against Christianity, because these occult practices, such as magic, they've been shunned, forced underground in the Dark Ages. And they've been seeking to popularize and mainstream it ever since. Occult practitioners lying in wait. Helena Blavatsky, Jack Parsons, Aleister Crowley, all clearly had a contempt for Christianity. So it's not like they've been bashful about it. They haven't been quiet about it. Truth is hidden right in plain sight. And these alchemists, they believe that every substance, every single one, has the potential for perfection. So, in order to do that, they seek to remove all the barriers that prevent this process. Removal of the barriers is what allows the substance to pierce the veil and make contact with the divine. Tip to tip, touching the divine, they achieve the perfection, these alchemists. That's why in Chapter 7 of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, you can read about Percy talking about how he can't wait to learn about transfiguration, because in the book they're hyping each other up on Hogwarts and all the little schools and the little classes they're going to take. And Percy talks about, I can't wait to learn transfiguration, about turning something into something else. Of course, a veiled reference to alchemy, because that's what it's all about. Another curiosity we should look at is the breasted goat known as the Baphomet. You know the Baphomet. Besides being on the logo for the Church of Satan, this entity symbolizes all of the processes our dear little Harry Potter endures during his time at Hogwarts. The perfecting, the solve, and coagula. Now, let's go a little bit deeper into Baphomet. Robert Bartlett wrote a book called Real Alchemy, A Primer of Practical Alchemy. And it lays out all of these familiar plot lines that I've been telling you about. I'm trying to fill you in on all the details so you don't have to read all these heady books. Paying particular focus to the main processes of alchemy, which are dissolution and composition. Because, as I said earlier, it's all about removing impurities, spiritualizing the material world through death and rebirth of the Messiah. It's a death and rebirth, dissolving and recomposing. That's why Baphomet has the tattoos on his forearms to say solve and coagula. Dissolve and coagulate to join together. Let's read from Robert Bartlett's book here. If you do not skin the bodies of their corporeal nature, and if you do not give a corporeal nature to incorporeal things, then nothing you wait for will take place. Hermes shows here the heart of the alchemical process, the change of something into its opposite, and of taking apart and putting back together again. Maria the Jewess, one of the mothers of alchemy, alluding to Hermes, elucidates the role of opposites in the act of creation when she says, make the corporeal incorporeal and the incorporeal corporeal, join male and female, and you shall have what you seek. So from this passage, we can understand why that male goat has the female titties. It's the Baphomet successfully merged of the spiritual and the physical, reconciling the opposites. Now, another great idea of alchemy will be further elaborated upon when we consider the apotheosis of Harry Potter. Alchemy can be understood as the release of the soul from the body and its subsequent reunion with it. This is the essence of the secret of composition. And it is in the composing that we find the final perfection, and the key to this final perfection comes from us. So there you go. If you had any doubts about Harry Potter's purpose, about what's going on in this story, about the man becoming God, it's right there in the book. The key to this final perfection comes from inside us. Alchemy is the release of the soul from the body and its subsequent reunion with it. And that's why Harry Potter dies and is reborn. His soul goes up to the purgatory with Dumbledore, the hermetic character, and rejoined, reborn, rebirth. He's basically the goat with the tits. Now, the origin of alchemy. This is another one of... Okay, so like there's different origins, different theories on this. One theory is that God taught it directly to Adam and then later to Moses. Another theory is that the fallen angels taught it to the women in exchange for the sexy time, which gave us the bloodlines of the Nephilim. That's from the Watchers, right? You remember that in the Bible, in the book of... Don't ask me. Ezekiel, I think. I don't know. Genesis? The Watchers come down, make sexy time with the women, make a bloodline called the Nephilim. God's not having that. Gives them the great deluge, floods them out. Yet another theory is that alchemy came from a remnant of a lost Atlantean technology. Or, as the ancient astronaut theory folks would tell you, the aliens themselves taught it to the past civilizations. And, of course, Atlantis was an idea supported by, you know, Francis Bacon, Blavatsky. She talked about all these root races. Isn't that funny how the ancient aliens folks are tied right into these occultists and their ideas? Isn't that curious? Well, while it's not spelled out which belief of alchemy exists in this Potterverse, that's my term for the Harry Potter universe that I'll be using from here out. They don't go that deep. Maybe it's in the books. I don't know. I didn't read all the books, like I told you earlier in the first part. It surely was considered by the author J.K. Rowling when she titled the first book Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. Because the Philosopher's Stone is, of course, the great work of alchemy. Going back in time, 1382, it was alleged that the real Philosopher's Stone was found when Nicholas and Perenal Flamel claimed to have found a mysterious manuscript and researched it to successfully transform matter into pure silver. Historians confirmed the existence of that couple, and they did in fact confirm that they were wealthy. So, were they successful? Maybe. Now, this historical connection is not so ironically made in the book when Dumbledore's card says that he is famous for working on alchemy with Mr. Nicholas Flamel himself. That's an actual character from the history of alchemy and the occult. And you also find out in the book, the Harry Potter book, Flamel is 665 years old. Well, isn't that curious? What a curious age. What a curious number to choose. What does it mean? Well, you ask the Harry Potter fans, they'll tell you nothing. They'll tell you it's totally fine. But 665, it implies he ascends the next year to immortality. Because he lived to be 665, then he ascends. And when does he do that? 666. And this makes perfect sense when you read the occult literature, because Manly P. Hall states that 666 is the number of the perfected man. Doesn't this all make sense yet? They are revealing, in a way, George Washington, the founding father, the Freemason, the OG Granola Freemason, he has that monument. It's a big penis. It's a big phallus, the obelisk. Dare I say, a large version of the wand. And it's 555 feet in height. Well, not quite 666, is it? But wait a minute. Convert that to inches and you get 6,660 inches. 6660. That's one big phallus. In the book, Harry Potter needs to find the Philosopher's Stone. So where do they go? They go underground into the cellars of Hogwarts, because that's where they allege it to be hidden. Now, this is also a reference, my friends, to the enlightenment of the occult practitioner, because all initiates must face the underworld and go underground, which is where they get a taste of death before their rebirth, a symbolic death for their symbolic rebirth. To take it to the next level is where Harry Potter goes when he dies and his soul is rejoined to his body. Now, these ancient Egyptians, they were alleged to have buried their members of the mystery schools back then underneath the pyramids of Giza for 3 days before allowing them to resurface. And you'll see similar processes like the allegations of the Skull and Bones Secret Society, where the initiates are placed in a coffin. That is why you see the phrase memento mori, which means remember we die. If you if you saw on my Instagram, you got to follow me on Instagram, by the way, at Isaac Weishaupt, because I put, they have a thing called stories. It's a little videos or whatever. Don't ask me. I don't know. It's a thing where you post stuff, but it's only there for 24 hours and then it's gone forever. I posted a shout out. Haas sent me some photos from Disney World. And on that, you can see there's not only do you see the 666 Disney World, you'll see Memento Mori with the all-seeing eye on a Disney gift shop. These Disney folks know what they're doing. They're talking to the kids, and they're filling their mind with all the subconscious, subliminal occult programming. But yeah, go follow me on Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt. Got lots of fun photos of me doing fun things and Instagram thoughting out with my dogs. And join in, and so you don't miss any of the stories, the fun stories, until they ban me from there, at least.
Another consideration is the concept of duality or polarity.
This connection between me and Voldemort. What if the reason for it is that I am becoming more like him? I just feel so angry all the time. And what if after everything that I've been through, something's gone wrong inside me? What if I'm becoming bad?
I want you to listen to me very carefully, Harry. You're not a bad person. You're a very good person who bad things have happened to. You understand? Besides, the world isn't split into good people and death eaters. We've all got both light and dark inside us. What matters is the part we choose to act on. That's who we really are.
It's a tale as old as time. The forces of light balanced against those of darkness. In the Potterverse, the Order of the Phoenix was intended to be the light side, while Voldemort and the Death Eaters, which is a great band name, by the way, if that's not taken yet, they represent the dark forces. And Potter leads the way towards balance of the two forces and redeems the power of evil through ritual magic. Now, the concepts are familiar when we consider the alchemical ideas of spirit versus matter and inner versus outer, all manipulated by the practitioners because, of course, spiritualizing the matter is what it's all about. And when we consider the inner versus outer, we could talk about the macro versus the micro, the cosmos versus the earthly realm, because, as you know, Potter and friends have to go through the portal into another dimension to get to Hogwarts. Everything's connected. And the practitioner is taught to manipulate the real world. Conformity through the will of the practitioner. Now the muggles, you, me, us, and the wizards are the two types of people in the Potterverse with the obvious cues as to who is the more enlightened bunch. The witches and the wizards are clearly in the know, while the muggles are at the feet of the master. And the know is, of course, the knowledge of reality, the gnosis, the enlightenment, the wisdom, which comes from the snake, the serpent, Lucifer, the devil himself, maybe. If you ask an occultist, they would tell you otherwise. But what exactly is reality from the viewpoint of these occultists? Well, you got to go back to 1570 to the OG godfather of modern Kabbalah, Isaac Luria, taught that Kabbalah, which, you know, and if you're not familiar with Kabbalah, this is the Hollywood religion. You see all these losers wearing the red string bracelets. If you look for it, you'll see it. Madonna, Britney Spears, the list goes on and on. I think Mila Kunis, maybe. I don't know. I think I saw her with a red bracelet. You see it all the time. I don't have the list on me. But they believe on some levels in Kabbalah, which is some form of Jewish mysticism, and not a lot of people look further than that. But this Isaac Luria fella, he taught that Kabbalah was actually a narrative of the fall and redemption of man. He taught that if God was good, then why would there be any pain and suffering? The logical conclusion he came to was that evil was a remnant of our universe from a world that existed before ours, a primal cosmos of unbalanced forces, and man's purpose here on Earth today is to redeem these powers of evil through occult practices like ritual magic and Kabbalah. Now, this sounds very similar to Gnosticism, and I'm sure there's like some fine intricacies that I'm probably overlooking for the sake of clarity and time. But in Gnosticism, there's also this weird inverted belief that God isn't really good and the serpent isn't really bad. There's these opposing forces, these polarities, if you will, and there's a lot of confusion, a lot of chaos surrounding what is good and what is bad. Now, Harry Potter is very much the Neo from The Matrix, because he is destined to be the one they prophesied about. And according to Robert Bartlett's book on alchemy, this savior figure is always reflecting on itself and creates the first movement towards polarity. So here we have the division of the one into the most subtle, spiritualized, and dense material energy. The one divided into spirit and matter, which, as you know from alchemical principles, needs to be connected again, spiritualized matter. And the one is special in that they embody the two opposing forces, both active and passive, or better known as good and evil. And we'll find out why this is so important in the Savior storyline when we get to the final section of this analysis, Apotheosis of Harry Potter.
Yes? What was this rare piece of magic?
Well, I don't know. I can't remember the name exactly. But it just got me wondering, are there some kinds of magic you're not allowed to teach us?
I'm potions master, Harry. I think your questions better be posed to Professor Snape.
Yes. He and I don't exactly see eye to eye, sir. What I mean to say is, well, he's not like you. You might misunderstand.
Yes. Well, there can be no light without the dark. So it is with magic. Myself, I strive to live within the light. I suggest you do the same.
Is that what you told Tom Riddle, sir, when he came asking questions?
For now, let's talk about Deathly Hallows. This is going to blow your mind. Get ready for this one. The symbol you've seen connected to Harry Potter, the Deathly Hallows symbol, the circle with the triangle and the wand of the middle. It's the Illuminate Confirm. Can you believe that? It is indeed. Freemason symbol. First, we will take a look at the inspiration, officially on the surface, for the masses, for the mundane. Because there are two reasons for everything. There's the good reason, and then the real reason. That's as per J.P. Morgan, Illuminate Confirm banker. So the good reason why the Deathly Hallows symbol is what it is, it shows three elements merged together: the Elder Wand, the Cloak of Invisibility, and the Resurrection Stone. And it is revealed through a tale of three brothers, the Three Stooges, who made a bridge with magic. But Big Death was over there hating on them, because he wanted them to drown in that river. So in exchange for three wishes, the brothers ask for the Elder Wand, the Cloak of Invisibility, and the Resurrection Stone. Now, they are important because if one person were to have all three of these in their possession, they could conquer death and become an immortal god. Now, the story is even analogous to this concept, the overall Harry Potter saga, that is, because the brothers are literally trying to defeat death. Overcome death. Overcoming death. Immortality, yes. Now, to me, this story of the Three Stooges is very curious because it's a retelling of a Freemason initiation into the third degree, and this story is told about a man named Hiram Abiff, a.k.a. the Widow's Son, a.k.a. Lil Abiff, a.k.a. Chief Architect of Solomon's Temple, and also, side caveat, some people believe Hiram Abiff is actually Jacques de Molay, the famed leader of the Knights Templar, the guy that inspired a group, a society called the Order of de Molay that your boy Walt Disney is a member of. Jacques de Molay, the guy worshiping the Baphomet head. Why was he worshiping the Baphomet? Well, we already talked about that. You already know. Now the story of Hiram Abiff. There were three robbers. This is very similar to the three brothers there. And they come across Abiff, because this is back in, 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago. People just put on sandals and walked around the desert or whatever it is they did. And three robbers came up on Abiff and hit him with a lick. And they wanted him to give up the secrets of the Freemasons, because he was building Solomon's Temple at the time, because he was the leader of the Freemason architecture, contract, whatever, however that worked. And he wouldn't give up the secrets. He wasn't a snitch, so he kept those secrets, and the robbers beat him to death with the Mason tools, the Masonic tools, the trowel, square, and since he died guarding these secrets, he is hailed as a saint to this Freemasonic Brotherhood, and they refer to him as the keeper of the secret word of Freemasonry. This, again, is a reference to the vow of silence, but you got to understand, again, you got to look at this from a big perspective of a couple, 2,000-3,000 years. These secret teachings were forced underground because they're heretical. They're saying that Lucifer, the devil, is the good guy. And then they sort of veiled who Lucifer was by calling it wisdom. So it's a very secretive hush-hush thing because clearly they would have been persecuted if their secret god was revealed to everybody. So they call this the secret word. And this is according to my research, based upon on the shoulders of giants before me, okay? I'm not claiming to be the the first one to figure this out. Bill Cooper talked about this in a 20-part Mystery Babylon series, which I highly recommend. But it lays it out very clearly, and it makes the most sense to me. So that's what I'm rolling with, the secret word of Freemasonry. And this is, again, the vow of silence. But it wasn't until the last 100 years that Blavatsky and Crowley, all of these occultists decided, well, we need to reveal the truth to the masses in a slow, coordinated effort. David Icke calls this, he calls the totalitarian tiptoe, this idea of slowly rolling out ideas and plans to the masses, because you can't jump from A to Z. You got to go A, B, C, D, and so on. Now, when the Freemasons and stuff used statements talking about the word was lost, they are referencing this event. But that doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? Why is that so important? Well, it could be referencing an even older legend on the lost penis of Osiris, the Egyptian deity. And the ancient Egyptian mystery schools, which are the predecessors to a lot of these secret societies. It's also why you see so much Egyptian goddess and god and deity worship all over the planet. These Egyptian mystery schools told the tale of Osiris being cut into several pieces, and then his consort, his wife Isis, reassembles him through magic. She couldn't find the lost penis. This was the word. So occult practitioners to this day believe the ultimate quest is to find the lost word. Find that lost penis. I know where you can find a big penis. Washington, D.C. Monument. I joke, but like, you know, the obelisk, the monument there, Harry Potter's wand, no pun intended there. They're all this penis worship is related. It's the lost word of Freemasonry, the lost penis of Osiris. But when the quest is fulfilled to find the lost word, which you can read as implementing the Luciferian religion, at this point, the final age will commence and the occult world will come to its full potential. Now, not to belabor this point further, but we also hear of a process called the Horcrux in the Harry Potter world. And what's that about? Well, it's about hiding one's soul in several pieces such that they can never die. And to do it, the practitioner must commit murder, which is, of course, what Voldemort has done. But each time a murder transpires, another rip occurs in the soul. Now, to me, this sounds very similar to the mythos of Osiris and Isis, with all the talk of ripping the body into several pieces and trying to find all these pieces and put them back together. Now, the ideas I've had about this Deathly Hallow symbol could normally be exaggerated, but, my friends, it wasn't until a BBC documentary about J.K. Rowling where the theories were proved more accurate. And, in fact, I'm going to read you from an article here referencing the film. Speaking in a new BBC documentary, the author says it's connected to a film that came out more than 40 years ago. This is in reference to the Deathly Hallows symbol and, of course, J.K. Rowling. Sorry, I forgot to set that up. Let me start over. Speaking in a new BBC documentary, the author, J.K. Rowling, says it's connected, the Deathly Hallows symbol, is connected to a film that came out more than 40 years ago. The film features a Masonic symbol and is similar to the one that appears in Harry Potter. She says she was watching the film when she found out her mother had died, and that something must have sunk in on a subconscious level. The Masonic symbol is very important in that movie, said J.K. Rowling, but how can she be so sure the two are connected? The reason I can be incredibly precise about when I drew this is that at some point when I was drawing the picture and watching the movie, my mother died. Then, many years later, she saw the film again and went cold all over. I looked at the sign of the Deathly Hallows and realized how similar they are. She said, I've got a feeling that on some deep subconscious level, they are connected. And the movie she's referring to is called The Man Who Would Be King. And the Masonic symbol, of course, the compass and square. The ones the robbers beat Hiram Abiff to death with. I don't know how you get beat to death by a ruler, but hey. I don't walk around the desert with sandals on either. But there you go. Right from the horse's mouth, the Deathly Hallows symbol is in fact connected to the Masonic compass and square, revealed to Rowling on a subconscious level. And as you know, if you followed my work for long enough, Carl Jung and such, Freud, Bernays, they all know about this secret subconscious back door into the mind of the masses. And Carl Jung, famed psychoanalyst and Gnostic, mind you, analyzed his own dreams and saw Gnosticism and alchemy as more relevant than Uncle Freud's repressed ideas on sexuality. And Jung believed that symbols of alchemy and such were found in many people's dreams who didn't know anything about them. He believed in a collective unconscious. There's that stuff when we talked about the panpsychism and this global connected consciousness stuff. That's where that comes from. Which he believed in this collective unconscious, which has all of these various myths and symbols and archetypes. And that's why entertainment follows the pattern of the hero's journey, of the monomyth that Joseph Campbell talks about. And bringing all of these images and symbols into the regular consciousness would help promote individuation, which just so happens to be the process little Harry Potter experiences on his journey. Furthermore, we can extend Harry Potter's indoctrination to the masses because an entire generation of people grew up right next to him, and they were influenced to obsess over Harry Potter to the point of sometimes tattooing this symbol on their bodies. My God, I can't believe it. The initiation didn't end at Harry Potter and Friends. It was meant to be a modern day 2001 A Space Odyssey, where the viewer is participating in a mass ritual, an awakening to occult practices at levels never seen before. Now that wraps up part two. So, my friends, if you're not subscribed to the show, do so, because part three, we're going to wrap this thing up. We're going to talk about the occult all-stars, Hermes, Lucifer, Crowley, Minerva, Draco, and then the long-awaited for apotheosis of Harry Potter. Harry Potter's a god. Make no doubt about it. He is Neo from the Matrix. He is the Gnostic savior, and we're going to wrap that up and prove that point. And look, I want to give a quick shout out. Everyone on Patreon team, shout out. All the support you do keeps this show rolling. If you want to sign up, support the show, patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. You'll get all of the finest things in life. You will see the list of the great things you get. Just check it out. And then drop them reviews. We need to get to 1,000 reviews on the show. And then I'll shut up. I'll shut up about the reviews. And I'm going to read them all. So drop the reviews, sign up for Patreon, or at least check it out, see what you think. And subscribe to the show, because part three is coming up, and it's going to be a hot one, folks. All right, till next time, stay woke.